The author knows what kind of manga this is. I'm just going to let you know. Hello and welcome to Love It or Weeb It, where we let you know if we love an anime enough to recommend it to everyone or if it's just for the worst of the weebs. I'm Annie, and I think the sexiest animal is a tiger, but specifically the tigers from Zootopia.
I'm Jeff, and I think the sexiest animal is Mr. Peanut Butter from BoJack Horseman.
No.
What?
Fine.
He's a pure, sweet, innocent, lovable boy. He's a good boy.
Ugh, okay.
Also, he's been married like 3 times, so you know he has something special going on.
Great.
Today, we're sampling the first 3 episodes of Beastars, which is subbed and dubbed on Netflix. It is 12 episodes. They originally aired in Japan between October and December of last year, so in the fall season. And they just dropped on Netflix on March 13th. So we're talking about it now as if it is in this anime season. To give some background on this series, it was originally a manga by Paro Itagaki, which is 17 volumes in Japan, which has been running since 2016. There are 5 volumes out in English by Viz Media. Never heard of them. I think Paro Itagaki is pretty interesting. I have not read the manga. Annie has.
Woo!
Because she's trash.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what I've heard about Paro Itagaki is really funny, and she seems really sweet. She apparently studied film and in college and drew doujin as a hobby, but couldn't find a job in the film industry. So she just submitted her doujin to a publisher and then got picked up and started drawing manga for real. But she's also the daughter of a famous manga, Keisuke Itagaki, who created Baki the Grappler, which I think is funny now because I think she's pretty much eclipsed him, at least in our circle of weebdom.
For sure.
But she didn't want that to be known for a while. Like, she didn't want to confirm that that was her father. So she just didn't reveal it until, I think, fall of last year, like right before the anime started, because she wanted to make a name for herself before being in his shadow. Also, she wears a chicken mask for all public appearances. So.
Yeah, she has to live up to her brand.
And the other notable thing about this series is that it is fully CGI. The studio is Studio Orange. They're notable for doing a lot of pretty novel 3D CGI animation.
Mm-hmm.
I think the thing they're really known for these days is Beastars and Land of the Lustrous, which came out a couple years ago now. So like 2017.
Yeah, I don't know.
And that got tons of praise for using being a fully CGI TV production that did not. It was like, for a lot of people, it was the first time they were like, wow, 3D anime that actually looks good. And Orange had done 3D work for lots of other studios before, but that I think was the first thing they like led and was entirely CGI. And yeah, I think they're really good about using CGI in novel ways and in only in context where it fits. So in Land of Lustrous, it was about gems that...
It was Steven Universe.
Yeah, it's basically Steven Universe.
It was Steven Universe again, but I didn't like how it looked at all. I hated it.
Well, Annie, we know Annie's wrong.
Yeah.
Annie's always wrong. That's the first rule of anime.
Fine, let's not talk about my opinions on Land of the Lustrous. This is not that episode.
But I think the thing, it's the through line between Land of Lustrous and Beastars is that they are both non-natural characters, or like they aren't standard human characters. In Land of Lustrous, they are gem
They're
people.
Gems. It's Steven Universe.
Well, okay, but I don't Steven Universe comparison. I feel like the Steven Universe characters, the gem people, feel more lifelike than the gem. Like the gems in Land of Lustrous like shatter and feel like fragile things that
feel
like...
Hey, you ever watched Steven Universe? They shatter, man.
Yeah, but they like, they're bubbly and like they like very fluid and like morph and stuff. Like I think they are...
That's
they
true.
Don't feel quite so like brittle. Like there's a lot about brittleness in Land of Lustrous. But in any case, I think that's the most notable things about this production. People who aren't familiar with it, the only information I found that I thought was interesting was that the director of the series was an assistant director on some lower tier Ghibli films like Pompoko and Porco Rosso.
Yeah, I like Porco Rosso.
I haven't seen it yet, so I can't judge.
How dare you?
And they also did assorted episodes on various other things like Rage of Bahamut Genesis, which is a good series. So that's pretty good pedigree. But I was confused because they don't have that many series under their under name, but they directed 2 episodes of a 1987 Little Women anime, which is available on Amazon Prime. So I think we should watch that next.
That's
Can that be your audience pick?
No, nobody would pick that.
Yeah. So Annie, what is Beastars about?
Okay. Well, it's just Zootopia, but no, it's
It's Zootopia that fucks.
It's Zootopia, but sexy. It's just about a world that is like anthropomorphic animals, like carnivores and herbivores, and they live in peace and harmony. And this is about a...
Do they?
Listen, Jeff, they are coexisting. And this is about, is it Sheraton Academy or Cheriton Academy? I'm saying Sheraton. But this is like Sheraton Academy. It's like this high school where we focus on Legoshi, and he is in the drama club. And I guess like the premise of it is that his clubmate Tem gets murdered, and so he was an herbivore, and now there's a lot of tension between the herbivores and the carnivores in the drama club and out. And I guess that's the most spoiler-free intro to the show.
Yeah, that pretty much encapsulates it, I guess. So you came into this with baggage because you already read a bunch of the manga.
Yes, the first 5 volumes.
And I've kept myself spoiler-free from Annie's bad takes. Listen. So tell me what you think about this series.
Okay, this series, this anime, I absolutely love it full heartedly.
What? That's not what
I'll say it with my... I know. I'll say it with my whole chest. I love Beastars.
Oh boy.
I'm a furry now.
Are yes. you rubbing the fur on your chest?
Yes, to show I'm off a the furry particle now. Effects? Yes. I oh, no. fully okay, so I read the manga and I was not feeling it. I didn't like volumes 1 through 4, and when I hit volume 5, it popped off. And this anime, or this season, covers about volumes 1 through 5. So you get to the part where it pops off if you watch the whole thing. But from the start of this show, I instantly was super into it. I don't typically like 3D animation. As I mentioned, I don't like Land of the Lustrous. A lot of time it just bothers me. And I'm like, ew, this is gross. This would have looked better 2D. But they actually made it work, and it felt like 3D trying to be 2D, but in a good way. Except in some weird scenes that I didn't like, but for the most part it looked really cool. The characters are more likable animated, I think, than in the manga, because you don't have to like read their inner thoughts. You can just like hear them kind of happening, and they do cool stuff where you can like see what one person's seeing and you can see the other person's perspective, and it just made it a lot better in the manga.
Okay, that's definitely not the reaction I expected.
Mm-hmm. You kept texting me saying like, I can't believe you hate this show, and I was like, I haven't said anything yet because I love it.
That bluff actually worked. That was supposed to be another Bofuri disaster where you hate you hate pure innocent good things.
Okay, Bofuri was not pure innocent.
Debatable, but this series is definitely not pure and innocent.
No, it's not. It's sexy.
Yeah, so I came into it, I had heard so much hype for the manga. And I basically like, someday I'll read the manga. And I never got around to it. And then figured, like, okay, once the anime is out, like, I should probably experience it as the anime, if that's, since that seems like it's going to be taking an interesting direction. And by episode 3, I'm definitely sold on it. I'm definitely very excited about it. This anime definitely made me think more than like any other series that we've covered, for sure. Even compared to Eizouken, which I think Eizouken like still is the critical darling of the season. But like, I love the subject matter that Eizouken covers, but it doesn't really make me like think about things. Like this one feels like it is very, like it's very seeped in metaphor in some ways, I think in ways that don't fully work, but like I'm thinking about, it feels like there's full of intent and like meaning behind things that, I don't know, the fact that it's thought provoking is the biggest plus for me. Yeah. But definitely my first impression was very like, ugh. Like, okay, by the end of episode 1, I was like, this is well made, but I really do not like the way the world is introduced. Like, I really do not like that our entry point to everything is the viciousness of the world, because I feel like it just doesn't make sense. Like, we see so much of how brutal it all is, and like, oh my God, this world's so vicious. And first of all, I think it's not that interesting, because that's exactly what we would expect of animals, like anthropomorphic animals. We would expect them to be obeying the, you know, the laws of nature that we're used to. But so first of all, it's like not subverting anything. It's just the obvious thing. And second of all, it doesn't fit with like they show all this viciousness and then they cut to school time and it's like happy school where people are coexisting.
Well, I think
like,
that was the point. I think they were trying to make the point that like this is not the norm in this world. It's kind of, it just feels like, honestly, I feel like Beastars was written more as like a normal drama and they just happen to be animals and like that introduced more problems or like more interesting dynamics. But it feels like she just wrote it as a, like, okay, we'll open up with this like dramatic murder that will really like set the tone for like what could happen. And then like we'll like pan to like the normal peaceful world. And I was like it does. If they weren't animals, that would just be like a normal show thing.
See, like, I see your point, but I don't think so.
What?
I see your point, but you're wrong and you're trash and you should reconsider all your life choices. No.
How? It just shows do that all the time.
No, because, like, the way that they're reacting to the news of one of their classmates being murdered is very much, like, almost like it's more gossip than, like, their lives being threatened. They don't feel like people who are acting like a person, like a classmate was just murdered. Not even just a classmate died. Like, they don't even seem somber enough to be reflecting that reality. They're not acting like someone's been murdered. They're not acting like someone's been murdered on campus by another classmate, which I guess they don't know that
they
part.
Don't know it was another classmate.
Right, they don't necessarily know that
you
part.
You don't know.
Tem is saying in the opening scene, like, we took classes together.
Okay, yeah, but the
I'm
other
dying.
People don't know that.
Right, they don't
poor
know
that. Poor Tem. I loved him. He was so sweet.
Okay, so there are what, like 3 degrees of it being, it should be a very dire situation, and they only know 2 out of 3 of them, but each one of those degrees should make it so that's a very...
Okay, they should be more sad.
Yeah, they should be more sad. They should be more like, it just feels like everyday life still, which I'm like, okay, that would be fitting if there was an attack and someone was injured, but like you can still go about your daily life, but like not like them worrying. And this is if it were human setting, but the fact that it's that plus there is this natural power imbalance of like the fact that the mice can't even walk without being stepped on potentially, like it doesn't feel like the world makes sense. And I think by the end of episode 3 I'm sold that like it does make more sense than that initial impression led me on to believe. And I just feel like mm-hmm. it's an awkward framing because it puts me in that lens where like I think that like them acting like nothing like it's still coexisting, like not that big of a problem, is I think the most awkward world building part of the show. And the fact that it starts off on that point,
I think it's fine. Because just because one person's murdered doesn't mean that all carnivores are murderers.
No.
So they can keep coexisting species.
But like they're not, and that's supposed to be the point that like there's tension now between the herbivores and the carnivores. But I never felt like, I did not feel like the students were concerned about their life while they were going to classes, you know?
Yeah.
Not to make it a war zone, but like it didn't feel like a place that where their life was in question, which like I feel like that's what the point of those scenes would constantly make. Like it's like this is a vicious place where like anyone can be killed at any moment. And then there's walking around.
I feel like that wasn't the point it was making. It was like clearly like a weird like outlier. People don't get murdered or eaten every day.
Well, that's kind of, so they do say that. They say like, I forget what the line. At one point, someone mentions that like that's the ultimate taboo, a carnivore eating an herbivore or whatever. But like, I didn't feel like I bought that because it didn't feel like, I guess it's like abstract because we don't see that happening to someone and we just see like life going on as normal. So I'm like, and the fact that it starts off with that murder happening like made me feel like you've framed it as if it's not an exceptional thing. Actually, no, the thing that really bothers me is that it doesn't just start off with a murder happening. It starts off with 3 scenes in a row of a carnivore attacking someone. There's the very first scene is like cutting forward to the end of the first episode when the main wolf character is attacking Haru. It seems like either on instinct or he's been manipulated to attack her, mm-hmm. and nothing comes of it except he, I guess, he scratches her. And then it cuts to Tem, the classmate that gets murdered, and like the scene of like them running away and getting attacked. And then after that, there's the scene of Nagoshi delivering Tem's love confession to Haru. And...
No, not to Haru.
Oh, sorry, it wasn't to Haru?
No, it wasn't to Haru. It was the girl sheep.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I was getting things mixed
to
up.
Haru.
My memory is mixed
How
up.
How could you say that? Else or Elsie or whatever?
Doesn't matter. Herbivores don't matter.
Oh God.
But yeah, so like and the way he delivers the love confession to her is framed as if it's like, oh my God, he's gonna attack her. Oh, he was just delivering a love confession. Oh, okay. It's actually fine. And I just like at that point I was like, okay, like how many of, and that was the last one. But like just like, okay, we get it. This is a vicious world where the carnivores could attack the herbivores. Okay.
I don't agree with your point at all, but we'll just have to disagree.
I just feel like the show is so much more complex than that.
I feel like it was trying to show that like that's how people are afraid of Nagoshi. And like he even has that moment. He's like, I'm used to being like feared and like not accepted. It's okay. You don't have to apologize to me. And I feel like it was trying to frame it like this is the world. Just because like they're carnivores, they're seen as like vicious monsters who could do this bad thing. And some people do it, but like, it's not everyone. Not Nagoshi, my sweet boy.
I kind of just wish it. He is the sweetest boy.
He's so good.
I guess I just wish it. You know, like we saw the normal daily life and like accepted that before it introduced like how exceptional this was. I feel like it's just inherently awkward to start off with something that's supposed to be exceptional and to get us to understand it's exceptional. And because I feel like it's so much easier to accidentally take away that's normal.
No, I think it's fine. But let's move on because we're not going to agree on this one.
Well, I'm not going to agree free to be
but
wrong.
I actually poor Tim, but I thought it was really cool, the animation in that scene, just like the outline. I thought that was like a really cool use of that. And then every time the door got slammed open, he would be like fully animated again, and then it would just be outlines. And that was super cool.
I think the 3D animation, in addition to the ways in which it just normally doesn't look jarring in a way that usually 3D anime does, like they apply lots of really cool effects and mix up the style enough that it's like there's always cool stuff to look at.
Yeah,
it's really nice.
Like, because I am usually bothered by 3D animation in like anime, so it was like really nice and looked really good. And especially when they were doing Lewis's walk, they like really animated the fuck out of his swagger.
Oh yeah,
it looked really good.
Sorry, I was processing because you're not pronouncing his name right. It's Louis.
Fine, Louis. But he, okay, did you notice when they introduced him and Legoshi was like listing off all of the good things about him? They were playing like really sexy music.
I missed that.
Every time Louis's in a scene, he has like really sexy music playing behind him. And I'm just like, they want to let you know that this guy's hot shit. He's great. Also, and okay, my little Seiyu sidebar.
Oh boy. Oh, here we go. Okay.
Is that Louis, his voice actor is Yuki Ono, who is Josuke. that sounds like a name
that has been in Granblue.
Granblue.
Oh yeah, it's the main character. It's Gran in Granblue. He actually is like a player of
Granblue.
And like hosts events and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's Josuke. So that's all that matters. He's a JoJo. But he has a really good voice. He's really good. And Louis just, I love him. And I'm fully into him and Legoshi being a happy couple.
Are there any other super famous voice actors that you were swooning over?
Super famous? Well, there's like, he plays a side character. But Kai, I don't know. He's like the little, I can't tell what kind of animal he is. But he's like this little animal in the beginning. Oh, he's a mongoose. Kai is a little mongoose who's yelling because he got taken off of the acting like group. He's played by Nobuhiko Okamoto, which is the same person who plays Bakugo.
Oh.
And like I heard him yelling and I was like, wait, who's that?
Yeah, so my dub variant of Seiyu section is that the only connection I thought was cute was that Brian Peacock plays a peacock.
Oh,
and
dumb.
So he was bragging about that. And he's there's more. So Brian Peacock is the voice of Takato from Digimon, which is the protagonist of season 3 of Digimon. But so I watched the first three episodes dubbed and then switched to subbed the third episode just because I wanted to experience the both dubbing tracks. And I'm really glad I switched then because I guess we should explain for people who haven't watched the episode. Kind of the loose premise, I feel like, of the basic characters is that everyone is more than they seem. Is that fair?
In Beastars?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like everyone kind of has
everyone's
like
got a secret, is how they put it in the drama club.
Oh. Everyone has an outward, you know, like appearance or like an outward impression they exhibit. And, you know, there's something else to them behind the scenes. Like we talked a lot about how the Legoshi is framed as being like scary and vicious and people are scared of him, but he's actually a sweet, sweet, good, shy boy on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about Louis a bunch. And in case you're confused, for some reason, the Netflix subtitles spell his name Ruiz, but they definitely are saying Louis. So in Japanese, that would be more ambiguous because, you know, Louis would be L or R. But anyway, he seems like this, like, you know, model. I guess this is kind of like a trope of like class president seems like the most perfect, you know, above board horse person.
He wants to be the next Beastar.
Yeah. But then secretly he's really brutal and mean and vicious.
Okay. He's not brutal and mean and vicious. He's just misunderstood.
Okay.
He's calculating.
There's probably going to be a lot more nuance to his character, but I feel like the point of this initial impression was that he is an herbivore. He is supposed to look really elegant and beautiful and pristine, but behind the scenes, he's like as brutal as you would expect from a carnivore.
He's frustrated that he's as powerless as an herbivore, but when carnivores are just born naturally with power.
Okay.
That's what he said in his whole speech.
Louis' number one fan here.
That's true. I'm a Louis stan.
But Haru, who's I think it's fair to say these are the three primary characters.
Yes.
Haru is the sweet little bunny that Legoshi attacks in the first episode.
And then he has a crush on.
Yeah, he has a crush on her because he scratched her and totally aren't. Okay, this is the point where the show really surprised me because I was like, okay, him attacking her and like having these urges to devour her. I'm like, okay, it's clearly going for these sexual metaphors. It's clearly a sexual metaphor. And then he goes to get flowers from Haru because she's part of the gardening club and they need flowers for the drama club or whatever. So he goes to get flowers from her. And then he helps her do something. And then she's like, takes him in the back room. And then she's like, okay, now we can do what you really came for. And starts to strip and starts to like reach down his pants to repay him with sexual favors.
Yeah.
And so I guess I was like, okay, I guess it's not metaphors anymore. I guess it's just the show is just full on horny.
Yeah. And at this point, he didn't even know her name and she didn't know his. She was like, I guess you're like all the males, but I've never done it with a carnivore. So here we go. And then sweet baby Legoshi panics.
And she's like, don't worry. You can be rough with me.
Yeah. But sweet baby Legoshi panicked so hard and just ran out the door after like putting a blanket on her. And he's like, oh, you'll catch a cold. And, like, puts a blanket on her and sprints away.
But yeah, so I am glad that point is basically the end of episode two. I'm glad that that's when I switched to the Japanese dubbing track because the voice actor of Haru in English is the voice of Kari from Digimon, who I'm glad that I switched before she started talking to him about, yeah, doing all the sexy, horny stuff. And I was like, okay, I don't want to think about Kari in that way. But yeah, the English dub was pretty good.
That's good.
I found no complaints.
I only did the sub, but it was great and I loved it. I really did just love the show so much that like I'm already like 7 episodes in.
Wow.
Yes, that's cheating. Mean we are sheltered in place, but so I had nothing else to do.
I'm in a bunker in case the sound quality is bad. I'm in a makeshift closet that's not really a closet. And next to both like multiple bathrooms and a garage and street. So it's a soundscape.
Yes. But like I'd already read the manga, so I was like, what's the harm of me watching the show? And I did, and it was so good. I'm a furry now. I get it.
Oh, no.
Legoshi, when he takes his shirt off, woo.
Yeah, I kind of, on the note of Legoshi's fur, wanted to dig into a little bit about, like, why the 3D animation looks so good, like, doesn't have the same, like, red flags as usually.
Yeah, tell us, Jeff.
Anime does. And, I don't know, I think a lot of it is, comes down to, like, the fact that they're not fully humanoid. Like, they're definitely humanoid, but they're not fully human. So if they fall a bit into the uncanny valley, then it's like you can easily attribute that to them being uncanny creatures to begin with. I think that same thing kind of applied to Land of Lustrous, but it was definitely, I feel like there was more of an acquired taste. Like this I think because we're kind of used to things like Zootopia and, you know, CGI in Western animation, I think it feels a bit more natural to us. And also, I mean, there's a ton of work that they did to make them, all the characters still feel very expressive. And there's a really good YouTube video from The Canepa Effect breaking down the animation of Beastars that came out a couple days ago, and we'll link it to it in the show notes. But I think the most interesting insight I got from that was how it talks about the process they had in animating and how they use CGI and stuff. And I was surprised by how much they basically like kind of do in 2D and then use 3D to like replicate, or like, you know, kind of like they get the expressions in 2D and then try to make the 3D models match that. So you still get a lot of the expression and emotiveness of 2D. Yeah. So I think it comes off really well. I was really worried because I was like, seeing Land of Lustrous, I was like, okay, these are things that like feel brittle and lifeless, but like animals are very full of life. Like I'm worried it's not going to come off well.
Well, I think one of the things that also benefited Beastars over Land of the Lustrous is, like, correct me if I'm wrong, but in Land of the Lustrous, the backgrounds didn't feel as like detailed or vibrant.
I don't think that's fair.
To this one, it like they were like 2D backgrounds in a lot of it. In Beastars, it felt like, or it was 3D that just like looked 2D, but it just like was detailed and really pretty. And in Land of Lustrous, I was just not into the
backgrounds.
Yeah, it didn't. I guess this one also benefits from like being our world and very familiar. There are some things that are like weird, like Louis' hand, because he's a deer. He just has a human hand.
Oh, does he? I didn't think too much about those things.
But how weird would it be if it was just like a hoof?
I'm looking at Beastars, Ruis, hand. I wish we could just call him Ruis.
Let's just call him Ruis.
Ruis.
Well, it's because the art in the anime has like his autographs all over the place as Ruis. So they had to commit to that in the subtitles. But you loved it by the end of episode 3. Why?
I would loved it. I think it was like midway through episode 2. Lit. I think by the end of episode 1, I was like, this is executed well, but like, I don't really see. I think I was just still found it dull from that initial impression. Like, it felt like the world building didn't make sense, or like I didn't really get what the thrust of the show is. But by the end of episode two, I felt like, I guess it was probably Haru's reveal that made me feel like this is a show about everyone having some other side to them, or like about the social hierarchy. I think it's not just that everyone has a secret, because like you were saying in the drama club, like there's a moment where they're like, everyone here has a weird thing to them, but like that was just quirky and a one-off joke or whatever. But
one-off joke, huh?
Okay, I guess it's gonna come back. Wow. Miss Annie foreshadowing. But I feel like what really I thought had a lot more depth to it was the fact that like it's all about these different like social hierarchies and social ladders, and that like Haru seems like someone who is like from, because Legoshi's been like preoccupied with like how he's physically overpowers her and he has a crush on her, but he's like, oh no, is she like going to be intimidated by me? Is she going to be scared of me? Mm-hmm. And like he considers himself a much higher on the hierarchy that he's concerned with. And then like once he realizes that she's like very sexually active, then like he's intimidated by that. And then it's like, you know, she has this other kind of power and this other type of hierarchy that he wasn't even aware of. So I think like the way it approaches those totally different like kinds of hierarchy, and how like everyone kind of has their own thing that they're comfortable in, and everything else that they are totally a fish out of water, not a fish in water. I mean, there probably are fish. Are there fishes in the show?
I don't know, because I think they mentioned something about seafood and I was like, excuse me? What? But I can't be sure. I can't remember.
So I think you mentioned at one point that like to you it felt kind of like this could have been just human characters, and they added the I want to say bestiality angle, but it's, they added the furry animal angle to it to like give it more flavor,
or just like added more complexity to the world, because there could have definitely just been a drama. I mean, there has been a drama before of just like, hey, a classmate got murdered and now there's a lot of tension between the students and like who did it and like whatever. But now, like, when you add in the animal stuff, like, it does add all that stuff. Or, like, the hierarchy stuff you just mentioned, just like, oh, like, I'm a carnivore, she's an herbivore. Am I, like, physically intimidating her? But here's, like, the other thing. But for the most part, it feels like it's written just, like, as a drama. Like, which is, I think, sets it apart from other things. Like, what was the other gross one? Seton Academy.
I don't know that one.
Oh, that's the one where all the dudes are all animals, but all the girls are just humans with cat ears and shit.
Oh, huh.
There's the controversy that it's dumb, because it is. But I think what sets this one apart from like other like anthropomorphic animal shows is that it takes the subject matter very seriously, and it goes through serious themes instead of like, haha, I'm a sexy bunny.
I mean, it does have occasional jokes, right? Like about like, oh, she almost stepping on a mouse and then them scurrying away to like, I don't know, their separate little lunch table.
But the world feels more serious and less like the whole show's a joke.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like very clearly like a serious commentary on something. I don't know what, but...
Yeah, I feel like, yes. So when my boyfriend and I were watching the first two episodes, I think he pretty much like had a similar comment of like, why does this have to be animals? Like, couldn't these just be humans? Like, I think he would have preferred, because he kind of grossed out by the furry angle. So it was like, this could just be humans. And I think from the actual like narrative and like who the characters are, it totally could. But I do feel like the furry layer on top like gives an extra like layer of meaning to things, and like so I think it adds to that theme of everyone kind of having their own, there being all these different social hierarchies, you know, because like, because there already are in a school setting these different social hierarchies, like, you know, like who can sit at the cool lunch table and like the cool jocks and the shy nerds and whatever,
the drama
and they
club. All
fit the drama club, but like everyone fits on, so there's like, but even within the drama club there's a social hierarchy that only applies within the drama club, that means nothing when you're dealing with the jocks in the lunchroom or whatever. Like, there are in a natural school setting all those social hierarchies already, and so then adding the herbivore carnivore stuff on top of that just like amps it up and like makes the characters more complex and gives them more sides and flavors to them. So I think that makes it more interesting
for sure,
and makes it more like readily approachable as a high school social hierarchy metaphor.
And then the
furries get to get excited about it, so you know.
It does have a similar, I guess it's not the same. I had more of a problem. I know I keep joking about Zootopia, but like they're similar.
I have gripes about Zootopia. Let's shit on Zootopia. Let's go.
Let's shit on Zootopia. So it like tried to do a similar thing where like carnivores were being persecuted for like being more violent and stuff versus herbivores, and they were like getting all like jailed and like because they were attacking people, but it was all like a weird like conspiracy. I don't remember. But a lot of people had problems with that metaphor because it felt like it was trying to be like a race metaphor.
Mm-hmm. I definitely think it was going for a racial metaphor. I think in comparison, like Zootopia is more of a racial metaphor and Beastars is more of a...
like social.
Yeah, like a social or like...
like a class.
Yeah, like a class, but I think leaning more towards gender actually.
Mm. Like, oh yeah, because most of the carnivores happen to be dudes.
Yeah, and it's not like one-to-one or anything, but yeah. It's like, I feel like Zootopia was definitely... felt very close to one-to-one, whereas mm-hmm. with race and Beastars feels like loosely correlated with gender, but
I feel like it's like gender and I guess like, yeah, class or status, because it feels like Louis is trying to climb the ladder and become a Beastar or the Beastar or the next mm-hmm. Beastar or whatever, and he's mad that like Legoshi was just born with this power and these gifts, and he's just not using them. And he's like acting more like frail or like less threatening. And like, I feel like that's kind of like a metaphor for like social status or class. Like if someone was like with all these gifts and they're not using them and you're having to climb your way from the bottom, it's like irritating. Mm-hmm. But we don't know that about Louis. Oops.
Yeah, I feel like... another angle of Zootopia that really bothered me is I'm really glad that this, at least the way, well, thank you, Garage, for going off right now in the middle of the sentence. I feel like I was really glad that the translation didn't really fall into the same trap, which is I'm pretty sure the Zootopia talked a lot, instead of framing things as herbivores and carnivores, I feel like it mostly talked about predators and prey.
Yes.
And I really hate that classification because it's not like... oh my god.
Oh my goodness. Are you under attack?
The garage door has to come up and then also go down, I guess.
Oof.
Because that's a fundamental law of the universe. Yeah, so I just don't like that distinction because, like, I guess there are herbivores are only prey. Like, they are not anyone's predator aside from plants or whatever. But, like, mm-hmm. carnivores are predators and prey. So to call them, like, the predator and the prey, like, feels like a muddled and confusing distinction when it's like carnivores are both of those things. Like there is a social hierarchy, or there is a, you know, like a food hierarchy, and you know, like, anyway, I really like the distinction of herbivores and carnivores, although yeah, I still don't know, like, the world building. I talk about how carnivore, the ultimate sin for a carnivore, sorry, the ultimate taboo for a carnivore is to eat an herbivore.
Yeah,
but what else?
Well, it was like the ultimate taboo of that world, I think, was what it was.
I'm just confused that, like, carnivores exist, but if they ever eat meat, they yeah. can't ever do that. So correct. How do they exist?
Well, if you notice one during like the lunch times, they'll mm-hmm. be like, oh, I'm getting, oh, like, oh, what's for lunch? He's like, oh, I got you a soy burger and something else. So like they're eating like meat replacements, and right, then like okay. the herbivores have their own, like, here's a salad.
Right, I guess that makes sense. So like it's like they need different types of nutrients, so as long as you get them like protein-based nutrients mm-hmm. or whatever.
Oh, so they keep okay. like dropping that in casually. There's like, oh, soy burger is my favorite, and I was like, cool, Jack, calm down. But it was cute.
I really hate how Zootopia like the theme of the movie felt like it was trying to be about, like, you know, like people shouldn't be in these boxes, and like, you know, it's about is it a fox
yes.
main guy, like he's like vilified for being this like wily evil thing, but he's actually like sweet and nice, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But the Zootopia has so much humor based on that same species essentialism that it was telling you to reject. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like
sloth being slow.
Yeah, it's like, wow, this sloth really is slow, isn't it? Huh? Makes you mm-hmm. laugh, huh? And it's like, cool, I thought we were about breaking down these boundaries. And then it's like, here's this other animal. They're being wacky because they're doing the thing you associate with that animal. Isn't that funny? Mm-hmm. It's like, okay. I guess also, we're supposed to laugh at them.
Could we make that joke about Haru? Because rabbits are known for doing...
Are they? Oh, huh.
Yeah.
Oh, I hadn't thought about that. Huh.
Well, now that you think about it, and deers are known for being excellent actors.
Yes, that's how Bambi got cast.
That's how Bambi got cast.
Didn't work out so well for Bambi's mom, you know?
No.
She was too good of an actor and killed on set.
Oh, no. But
yeah.
I think Beastars handles it a lot better, whatever metaphor yeah. they're trying to go for. It's unclear to me at this moment.
Well, I feel like Zootopia, maybe it's because it was like a single narrative movie kind of thing mm-hmm. compared to a long-running manga and series, but I feel like Zootopia felt very much like we have a message in mind, whereas Beastars feels like it doesn't have a there's no, I think it's a good thing about Beastars actually, that it's not telling you like, here's the message, here's what we believe in very firmly. It's like, instead it's like, here are all these complex characters. And if anything, the meaning is just to be gleaned from seeing all these complex characters interact.
Yeah.
And it's not quite so like this thing you
it's
saw.
It's not black and white.
You were bad, think it, but also laugh yeah. at it for mm-hmm. keep thinking it so you can laugh at our jokes.
Yeah, so Beastars handles everything pretty well. It does feel like a serious drama, which I loved, but it's also very much up my alley because it is also romance. And
I feel like we haven't seen much of the romance yet.
Okay, well, we've seen enough for me. Can we talk about all of the sexual tension between Legoshi and Louis?
Oh boy, all right. You don't care about the actual canon romance. You care about the Fujoshi romance.
Listen, no, like Haru thinks cute, but she's not interested. So
I really did not get any kind of, you know, like healthy or positive vibe from that exchange between Legoshi and Louis.
Okay, listen, we have to get there, okay?
I really did not like him. Like, in that position, Legoshi is so dominated by Louis. Oh, God, that sounds...
Yeah, he anyway. Is.
Like, he's just so out of his element and so, like, shy and awkward. And Louis is such the opposite, like, so competent so in that social setting that it, like, I'm just, like, he's practically abusing him. Like,
okay, yes, he is. But, like, listen, it gets better. Okay, so...
I mean, it definitely seems like there's some...
tension?
Dojin fuel going there with the, like...
Yeah,
I with the sexy bite music. Me, bite me.
Yes, he straight up... Wait, I think I took screenshots of a certain scene that I loved. Okay, so it was that scene, and he, like, slams him up against the wall. And he's like, I always wanted to ask you this, with his hand still on his chest. And then he's yelling at him about his like ferociousness and how he was born with it. And he has his hand on his throat, his other hand on his chest. And he's like, show it to me rather than holding it back. And like, I was like, yes. The Fujoshi jumped out. It just.
I'm not sure why that didn't spark my interest. Because when you describe it like that, I have certainly watched videos of that nature, mm-hmm. that storyline.
But like when Legoshi, it was like when Legoshi was describing Louis earlier on in the episode, or like early on in the series, he was just listing all these great things about him. He's like, oh, he's incredible. Like everyone loves him. Basically, like, I love him. And then when he's talking about him during the play, even after this incident, like when Louis's like acting his little heart out with a broken foot. He's like, wow, he's incredible. I was mesmerized. I couldn't look away. No one could. And I was like, he loves him for sure. But I feel like I don't want to do too many opinions on this because I have like read to basically the end of the first season of this. Mm-hmm. But like, I do enjoy their relationship, even just as friends, because they it's not all aggression. Louis's working through some stuff.
Okay.
Like everyone, like that little one-off comment that Kai makes about, hey, everyone in the drama club has like a weird thing about them or a secret. And then Legoshi's like, immediately he's like, what's Louis? He didn't think about anybody else. He's like, oh, even Louis? So yeah, he's working through his secret. And then Legoshi, it seems like, doesn't know what his is, but we'll find out.
Okay.
So we did get some Twitter questions, and one was by at Hey It's Hales, and they said, who do you like more, Legoshi or Ruiz/Louis? Or Louis, I don't know. So I think Legoshi, because he's so sweet, and so, you know what, he gets real sexy, but...
Oh boy.
But I do really love Louis. I want to support him in his endeavor.
I don't love Louis yet at all. Like, I get that there's all the, I feel like I came away from it being like, Louis is a complete asshole. Like, maybe he'll be redeemed later, but like, there was nothing redeemable about him in these episodes. He's terrible. We're supposed to think he's terrible.
No.
And you came away from it being like, here's all this nuance and here are all these things he said. And like, so I get there's probably more to him, but he hasn't endeared himself to me. I guess I'm not enough of a Fujoshi, or technically Fudanshi, whatever, to have that override when someone's an asshole.
Like, he didn't. He apologized, I think. Mm-hmm. But then Legoshi also apologized. He's like, oh, I'm sorry. And then I was like, no, my sweet boy. Bye. Because he was like, he just came in. He's like, hey, I came to check on you.
Have you ever noticed? So I'm just looping the, when you post this on Twitter, the call out for questions, you use the GIF of Louis pulling Legoshi in. And the shape that's formed, like the empty space below their necks when Louis pulls Legoshi in, forms a heart.
Yeah, it does. They're in love. You need to wake up.
It is just a heart. Oh my God.
Wake up, Jeff. This is true love. But we also got another Twitter question from @TaLazyArtist. It says, preferred outcome for Haru and Legoshi's relationship? Romance, platonic friendship, murder? And I'm like, ooh, all of the above. My ideal situation is for them, for Haru and Legoshi, to be in a throuple with Louis.
Oh boy.
I need it. I do. Jeff, I wish I could talk about things that happened further in the series with you, but I can't. But I kind of love the dynamic between Haru and Legoshi, because like he's obviously like just a big awkward nerd, and she's like a very confident, not powerful because she's a rabbit.
A woman.
She's just like a very confident, while small person or animal. And I like that he's like so physically intimidating, but she's just not really that bothered by it, except for her instincts, obviously. But I love them, and I want them to be happy, but I want them to be happy with Louis, who Legoshi and Louis would also be a great couple.
Oh boy. We understand your stance on that. Mm-hmm. In and out by now.
Okay, well, Jeff, what are your thoughts about Haru and Legoshi?
I've seen enough information trickle in that I just assume that they are a like long-term canon couple kind of thing, and I don't think I like that so far. Yeah. I feel like I'm not sold on it yet. Like, I feel like it is there, but they're both interesting characters. I'm interested in both of them, but I'm not like, it doesn't seem like
them in together.
Yeah, like I think his crush on her is sweet, and like his moral dilemma of having a crush on her while also having this experience where he like kind of almost devoured her is an interesting moral dilemma in his own mind. But yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't understand her thought process, if she even was thinking about him. If it turns out that she is aware of him and is turned on to him because he almost devoured her, I don't think I'd be comfortable with that. So I hope it's not going that direction.
Okay, so I think that while this show, very sexy, very into it, I'm very confused about the actual physical act.
how they can do it?
Because she's so small.
Well, also, like,
she's so small, he's so big. It doesn't make sense.
I would say, like, they shouldn't have different animals shouldn't have compatible sex organs.
No,
but then there are weird crosses between like a liger.
Okay, yeah, but that doesn't really show up in this world. And like, it comes up with the girl who's bullying Haru is like, don't talk to my boyfriend because we're both Harlequin rabbits and you will never be at a Harlequin rabbit, and you will further endanger the species if he and I don't end up together. And it's like, oh, so like in this world, are you supposed to just pair up with your own species? Because Jack even says like, oh, Legoshi, you have a crush on someone.
You know, Annie, I think you're imposing your heteronormativity on this world. Maybe this is a fully realized queer society where the prerogative of sex is not to have children. Had you thought about that?
Okay, but that's a side consequence that will happen. Okay, well, can I tell
but
you?
Maybe no. Not if they're just,
Jeff,
you know.
Jeff, minor spoiler.
Okay.
In, I think, the end of volume 4, there's like a side note by the author that the condom section in the world is the biggest section in all stores. They have to have different sizes for every animal.
Oh boy.
And I was like, oh no.
So yeah, I wonder if they. Do they have condoms to avoid pregnancy or to avoid STDs?
Both. Please wear a condom, everyone. This is a PSA. Don't get pregnant. Don't get STDs. But it was very funny seeing that little side note. And I was like, the author knows what kind of manga this is. I'm just going to let you know.
I was curious, since this manga is so inherently sexual. And is it like looking into the author's background, like they had drawn Dojin, and I couldn't, maybe people must have like found it out there, but I couldn't find easy reference to like what series they had done Dojin for, or maybe it was Original Works or something. But I was I'm curious what other series they are horny for.
I don't know. They wear a chicken head into every appearance, so like the furry energy is strong.
Are chickens furries?
Oh, you can be a chicken furry.
Okay, sorry, I was not aware.
I think it's just any.
I'm sorry if I offended all of our chicken furries out there.
Yes, they're chicken furries. Fursuits. No. Jeff, but anyways, I love this show. I'm gonna keep watching. I'm already halfway there. I would recommend you watch it over read it, though.
Yeah, what do you think? Why is that? What do you think is elevated in the manga, in the anime form?
They definitely animate Legoshi in a way that endears you to him. Like, he's clearly more awkward and more, the way he moves, he's like clearly unsure of himself, and like they make it so Haru looks like very confident. Louis looks very confident, and it just gives the characters more personality, and you do get to hear like their inner monologue instead of like, it kind of felt like reading it, it just felt like a burden on me. I was like, just show me the pictures, I can't read. But it was like a lot of like, you miss stuff without like inflection in like the voice. Because Legoshi could be saying just like, oh, she's really cute. Or he could be saying like, oh geez, she's really cute.
But you don't understand Japanese, so.
No, but you can tell like the way the voice is, like if he's stuttering, and like also the facial expressions he's making. Because like in the manga, like it is just like one still drawing, and it's not, he doesn't look as panicked. He like has like one moment of like, ah. But like, especially in episode 2 when he's like running away from her getting naked, it's like it was much more endearing in the show versus the manga. Also, I think the pacing's pretty good.
Yeah, that's something I thought was interesting. So I think basically, I feel kind of bad. I feel like the studio and producers from the studio have had to do their own guerrilla marketing for the show because Netflix doesn't do great marketing to the anime crowd.
No.
But so I think that this is from like a string of tweets that one of the producers from the show basically like kind of promised like, oh, if we can get this many retweets, then we'll talk about behind the scenes things once it comes out on Netflix. But so this is, I guess I'll link to these tweets in the show notes, but this one in particular was saying that when it aired in Japan, they got a lot of responses saying that they felt that the episodes went by so fast that it would like, they'd be like, oh, wait, the episode's already over? What? Huh?
Mm-hmm.
And they talk a little bit about like why they thought that was, but I was curious if you had that reaction too, because I definitely felt that. I was like, it's not like watching these three episode samples of each show, it's never really like a burden, but usually it's like, okay, how much time is left? And this one, I kept being like, oh, the episode's over. Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
I think it's because it was like the story was pretty well paced and a lot happened in the show. And I was engrossed in it so much that I didn't notice how much time had passed. Because I feel like when a show's bad, like it takes forever to get through. Like sitting through Plunderer took it out of me. But like this show, I had accidentally watched 5 episodes in a row. And I was like, oh, geez. Oh, God, I went past where I was supposed to. But it was so good. And they also, every episode ends kind of on a cliffhanger.
Mm-hmm. I think one thing they mention is that that there are like the number of shots in the episode is actually somewhat unique. That like usually a normal anime of this length would have 300 shots, but the goal of the series was to have 200 range for each episode. And I don't know what that says aside from the fact that like they're clearly effective at keeping your attention. So you never feel like, oh my God, this shot has gone on too long. The scene's gone on too long. Like I think that the material and the way things are directed and shown on screen, it's like you're so engrossed that it can linger a little bit longer.
Yeah. And they also did a good job with the shots when they did 2 and 1.
Oh yeah, like the split screens to show like both characters' emotion.
Yeah, and both of their perspectives, like looking up at Legoshi and like looking down on Haru. And also they did like this really cute thing that I loved that while she was getting naked, I think. No. While she was gardening, it was just a frame.
Same thing, really.
Yeah, same thing. It was just Legoshi's face. And he was trying to work up the courage to ask about her arm. And so it was just his face the whole time. But in the outline of his face was her gardening.
Oh, yeah. Like,
do you remember
like,
that?
Yeah, I remember noting that because it was like we were seeing his perspective outlined in his face. And I was like,
yeah,
this seems like an obvious thing, but it's really well done. I don't think I've seen it before. And
yeah, it was really cool. Wait, can I tell you a thing I didn't like?
No, it's illegal.
Okay, well, here's my thing. So when he smells her for the first time and like the scent goes in his very apparently 3D head at that moment and travels through his body, and he's like, and we go inside, we like magic school bus inside of his body to see the effect it has on him, and then his like instincts take over to like go attack her. I didn't like how that looked.
Mm.
I just hated it. I was like, that's the 3D animation I don't like. Ugh. But everything else, great. Just those moments, I was like, no.
I got that impression when we were talking about It Invaded, too, that you didn't like how, like, some of the cool, like, 3D visual effects were applied in that show.
That's true. I don't like those.
I don't know. To me, I'm like, this makes sense for these things. Like, they're not real, so it's not in the Uncanny Valley. Or it is, they were talking about a real thing that's going into its face or whatever, but it's not, like, we've never literally seen it. It's things that would be under a microscope normally. So I'm like, I'm used to seeing those as 3D illustrations, like 3D simulations or illustrations or whatever. So I don't know.
Doesn't bother you?
To me, it feels natural. Yeah.
Oh, I hated it. I was like, I get it. We're in his bloodstream. He can smell good.
Yeah, I don't know if it was like necessary from a like storyboarding and direction standpoint, but
it for a while too, like not like that long, but I was like, okay, we could have just had it like go in his body and like seen him twitch or something. We didn't need it through his whole like internal organs.
I think the effect that had of lingering on and showing us the entire like process of it going through his organs, like how it gets into his nose and then spreads out through his whole body. And maybe this isn't correct, maybe I've drawn the wrong conclusion, considering you know where the story goes, but like my impression from that was that it was to illustrate that it clearly wasn't him just smelling her normally. There was something malicious or something like, you know, affecting his physiology in a way that was not natural, that he was being manipulated, that like changed his nature, and that we're supposed to suspect someone tampering with him.
Who knows, Jeff?
Who knows?
Not me.
I am confused. I am a little frustrated that wasn't like directly addressed. Or not. Like, I feel like Legoshi, what to me would feel like the natural reaction the next day, once he wakes up and had like a weird dream, whatever, would be to, like, did that happen? He clearly like notices her scratch, so he knows it happened, but he doesn't seem to ask like, did someone, like, was that just me or did someone mess with me? I don't know.
Yeah.
I guess he assumes
it happened.
I guess he's just such a good boy that he assumes he's at fault and assumes he's guilty.
Yeah. He assumes he's the worst and I feel so sad every time. Like the moment where he's like, I clip my nails every day, but they just grow back so sharp. I was like, oh, baby.
Let me protect you. Oh, baby, you should use a nail filer too.
I was like, let me protect you from this cruel world.
Oh, boy.
My sweet Legoshi.
And then he'll eat you and you'll find it sexy.
Yeah, I will. Hey.
And then he'll be a murderer, which will make you even more horny for him, even though you'll be dead. Yeah. You know how it goes.
Anyways, I loved it. What's your verdict, Jeff?
Yeah, I guess, is this our first double love it?
I think it is. I think we both loved it. Yeah, we did it. We liked one.
The show is no longer called Weebit or Weebit. We've earned half
now
the
title. Now it's Love It or Weebit. And it's a show that came out last season in Japan. But thanks, Netflix, for letting it out of jail and for doing a good job with the dub, I guess. I didn't listen, but anyways, I loved it. I'm glad. Thank you for listening.
So I guess this is our first double love it, which means we are locking in a full season review at the end of the season, which is coming up soon.
Okay, I'm already ready. I need like one more day and I'll be ready to fully review it.
Oh boy, don't get too... We're going to record it for a couple weeks, so...
Shit, I'm ready though, Jeff.
Oh, so this is when you... I see why you texted me. You're like, can we record early? Like, we record on Sunday.
Because I had already watched it. It's so good. Okay, so... Thank you for listening. Please review us on Apple Podcasts. If you do, we'll love you forever. We did get a nice review from user Catapewpew, who said, wish there was more, ... And then, if only there was more dog-friendly content, but 5 stars.
Yeah, and I feel like this was...
This is dog-friendly content. We've got Legoshi. We've got Jack.
This is like the monkey paws finger curling. Like, they want us to cover dog friendly shows. Instead, we have dog horny shows.
Yeah, we do. This is dog friendly. Well, thanks, Catapewpew.
I think we need to explain that Cat is our in real life friend who is upset that we're not covering the Oda
Cinnamon Nobunaga
and is trying to launch a campaign to get us to cover it as our audience pick.
Yes. She is failing miserably, though, so...
Well, she's failing miserably, but the other choice... So we just decide now? We have to decide.
No, we're not deciding now. We'll just release this one and we'll decide after.
Yeah, listen to the next episode next week to find out.
If you support Kat's campaign to make us listen to Oda Cinnamon Nobunaga, or make us watch Oda Cinnamon Nobunaga, then go ahead and email it to us at loveitorweebit@gmail.com or tweet it at us at loveitorweebit. Or if you want to suggest something else so we don't have to watch Oda Cinnamon Nobunaga, please tweet that or email us those.
And if your vote is split, then we'll have to watch Dragon Prince.
No, please, God. All right. Thanks for listening. And I'm definitely Jeff.
And I'm Annie Has Terrible Taste.
Okay, see you next week for... Something.
Something it's that a, we're going to cover.
It's a fun mystery.
It's going to be an anime.
It's going to probably be Dragon Prince. All right.
All right.
Bye. Bye.
And as we always say, if you can't weeb yourself, how in the hell are you going to weeb somebody else? Can I get an amen?
Amen.
Let the music play. If you can't weeb yourself, how in the hell are you going to weeb somebody else? Can I get an amen? Can I get an amen? Can I get an amen? Annie, you're supposed to amen.
Oh, amen.
Let the music play.
I was like, why are you doing it so many times?
Oh my God.
I was like, he probably just wants to get it perfect.
I mean, I don't remember the cadence that Ryu uses.
Can I get an amen?
And does it just say, can I get an, or does it like, can I get an amen up in here?
I don't
there's
know.
An up in here.
I don't watch RuPaul because Ryu, is an accomplice for fracking.
Oh, well, that too. Okay. That's
and
wild.
Also problematic. You think Rue's gonna let an Asian queen win? I don't think so. So she's great.
Yeah.
Listen, Rue's racist and... Jeff, can you please just watch all of Beastars and we talk about it like tomorrow? It's so good.
I'm going to focus on editing this episode instead
of listening or watching Beastars.
I guess we didn't even focus on the, because we're supposed to be thinking about like what would we recommend to everyone unilaterally without hesitation or whatever.
Beastars, for sure, I would recommend.
Yeah, but we didn't like clarify that like why would it be the universal pick, you know?
I feel like kind of when we were like, this could just be a drama without being animal.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of it. We didn't explicitly say that's why, but I feel like that works. If anyone's like, hey, what's up? We're like, oh, we said that.
Well, yeah, I think I might also leave this part in the after show, in the after the bloopers. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think it's like, I understand people who aren't weebs being very trepidatious about the show. Like, it definitely seems like the kind of thing that's like, do we watch this horny furry show?
Hell yeah, you do.
But I think if you get over that barrier and give it a shot, it'll surprise you.
Yeah, like people who don't like anime watch Castlevania. That's some horny vampire shit.
Can I send you some of these? I looked up like sexiest animal and found a BuzzFeed list.
Oh god,
this is a squirrel that's about to jump a fence. It's okay. Pretty hot.
Wait, I clicked on your link and it just took me to the picture of the squirrel.
Yeah, that's all I wanted to share with you.
Oh, I thought you were gonna send me to the list.
No, they're trash. Some of these contestants are trash and they should not be given screen time.
Wow.
Ooh, this one dog's so cute.